Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stu Webb here at stuweb.com, and it is Saturday, January the 23rd, 2021. And I have the honor to have Professor Paul on with me and Professor James Fetzer on with me. Now, I'm going to let Jim Fetzer take it and run with it here because he's got some important things to say. And I listened to another broadcast he did, and it was excellent. So with that said, I welcome both of you to the show. And Jim Fetzer, would you pick it up, sir?
Well, thank you so much, Stu. To put all this into historical perspective, Donald Trump was recruited by a couple of hundred generals to clean up Washington, D.C., to drain the swamp. They approached him and discussed with him that they had been contemplating having to carry in a coup against Barack Obama because of the profundity of the sordid activities taking place there, which included flying little boys and little girls in from Chicago for a private party at the White House, where Obama, though not widely known, had a torrid homosexual affair with Rahm Emanuel when he was in Illinois. They were notorious in the bathhouses there. He brought him together with him to Washington, D.C. to be his chief of staff. He's married to another man who was born Michael Von Robinson.
Now, I want to mention something, if I may interrupt you, about Rahm Emanuel just for a minute. He's an Israeli Mossad colonel. He fought in the Jewish Defense Forces. Okay?
You know, Stu, I think that's an excellent point because Israel is so profoundly involved in what's going on here, where they have used their assets in the mainstream media to demonize Trump again and again and again, where I have a panel of 100 executives from CNN, all of whom are dual U.S. Israeli citizens, another from NBC, all of whom are dual U.S. Israeli citizens, and a third from the New York Times, all of dual U.S. Israeli citizens, which has troubled me profoundly, given that Trump had been so generous toward Israel, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, declaring Golan Heights a part of Israel, unfunding the UN agency, assisting Palestinian refugees, even outrageously redefining anti-Semitism by means of an executive order to include criticism of the government of Israel's policies and actions, which is a blatant violation of the First Amendment. The Democrats actually had wanted to impeach Trump over something serious instead of an innocuous phone call with the president of Ukraine. They could have picked up on this, but they are blatant violators of freedom of speech themselves, and they have gone all in with the social media giants to censor any criticism of their actions and of the evidence of the overwhelmingly massive theft of the election in 2020 and what happened at the Capitol, which was a classic false flag event. But we now have the brother of Jonathan Sullivan, who's the leader of Antifa, explain how his brother had led 226 Antifa members into the Capitol to great mayhem, orchestrated by Nancy Pelosi, the mayor of Washington, and the Capitol Police, to have a ground to smear Trump, to interrupt the discussion of the election theft, and to, use it as a basis for another impeachment, where they are terrified of Trump because he wiped their ass, he cleaned up, he mopped the floor with them in 2020. And they're petrified that he might return to politics and do it again. Well, the story is much more complicated. The generals recruited Trump, and he discussed with them the issues and said, why can't we just go and arrest them all now?
I asked you a quick question.
And they discovered that 70% of the government would be taken into custody and that the government would collapse. Paul, were you on that?
I just want to ask you, is General Flynn one of them that convinced him to become president?
Say again, Stu?
Was General Flynn one of the generals that convinced him to become president?
Well, it was a matter of convincing him to run for president.
Oh, right.
I'm sure
yeah.
Flynn was. gods among them, yes.
Yes.
I mean, this is, you know, there's so many aspects to this very complicated story, but the fact is that they supported him, and of course, in spite of the fact that the election in 2016 was rigged for Hillary, he prevailed once again. He knew that they would try it all over when in 2018 they used Google, got into the fray, and was sending out announcements, reminders to vote for people they knew, based on their knowledge acquired through the social media, would vote Democrat, which led to the House being retaken by Nancy Pelosi becoming Speaker. It was an artificial phenomenon. Trump knew they would pull the same thing again in 2020. So he signed an executive order on 12 September 2018 against foreign interference in domestic elections that gave him great authority to seize the assets and prosecute the personnel of any foreign entity, where it turns out that the Dominion voting machines that were the key to the theft of the election are based in Canada. That Silla, a company used to tabulate the votes, is based in Spain. And that it turned out to be a late development that Italy was involved, where Barack Obama had gone to visit Italy to talk about, you know, working out the use of Italian satellites, known as the Leonardo satellites, to manipulate the vote to make it harder to track in the United States. This was a late-breaking piece of the puzzle. Now, Trump got in and discovered, and I think it's fortuitous, he had this background as a billionaire and a businessman, that the United States had been a corporation since 1871. In the wake of the Civil War, which of course drained resources on both the side of the North and the side of the South, the country had gone bankrupt. It entered into agreements with European bankers, especially in the UK, to use the land and resources of the United States as collateral for massive debts, which meant the United States was no longer a constitutional republic, but now this ersatz entity as a corporation. Trump, because he was used to dealing with corporations, bankruptcy, and the like, recognized this was a terrible plight for the United States, and set about taking measures to correct it, such that 18 months ago he submitted the legal documents to London for the dissolution of the corporation, which would occur at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on the 19th. In other words, just before the election would take place, the inauguration would take place on the 20th. Well, all the assets of the corporation go to the United States of America now, the Republic. Legally, you see the name United States of America caps when we're talking about the corporation, but the corporation is now defunct. So what has happened is that in terms of this election, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are officers of a defunct corporation. They seem to be gradually, it's dawning on them that they aren't really in positions of power. The Pentagon was very much involved in carrying out all of these matters and is now, it appears, in control, where Trump did execute an insurrection act. And the Pentagon and FEMA are managing, but if there is a president of the United States, it continues to be Donald Trump, but not Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And I'll just say, it's utterly fascinating what's been going on here, because they have been, Joe Biden has been signing executive orders at a phenomenal rate, things that, some of which are really catastrophic, such as this transgender rule that would allow boys and men who declare themselves to be female into women's locker rooms and showers and compete in women's athletics, which has the function of destroying women's sports, but also that he has canceled the XL pipeline, which is going to cost about 50,000 jobs right off the bat. It's also going to mean the United States is no longer energy dependent. always offended Canada. And of course, any parent hearing about this transgender thing would be outraged. And of course, they're acting as though they had a mandate when they know full well they had no mandate. And that's part and parcel why the troops were in Washington. They were worried that a whole lot of Trump supporters would come to Washington to seize them. I think it's their paranoia because they're all aware of what actually happened. Just to tie this off and invite Paul in for his commentary, we have photographs in the Oval Office that suggest it's actually a set, because if you compare them with photographs of Donald Trump in the Oval Office, there's three windows behind Trump and looking at him. The window on the left, middle, and far all have brush and tree in the background. But when you look at a photograph of Biden there, it has a parking lot in the background. And obviously, there's no parking lot there. But this is only one of a number of very anomalous aspects. It appears that the inauguration itself was recorded in advance. I have a report from one source that it was received in France, in Spain, like 7 hours before the inauguration took place. I was myself monitoring very closely the timeline because they were actually conducting the inauguration before noon on the 20th, which meant it wasn't legitimate. And there's all sorts of other indications, including that Joe Biden's shoes turned from tan to blue to tan during the inauguration, that this is all a lot of funny business. And my understanding is that Trump is still being flown on military planes and that Biden is being refused their use, and that the Pentagon has declared that Joe Biden may not set foot in the building.
Oh. I want to add a couple of things. Sidney Powell, is she running the show at the Pentagon basically as a prosecutor? I know she was given the job, according to Scott Bennett, about 2.5 weeks.
Sidney is a qualified military prosecutor, and she may have a role here as matters move forward. But she's not in control. That would be the Secretary of Defense and the head of FEMA,
right,
who appear to have control under the Insurrection Act. So basically, McDonnell is out of the way while they carry on. But there were so many oddities about his departure. You know, he was surprisingly cheerful. He was talking about the best days of America lying ahead. He was talking about he would return in one form or another. And there are projections that in terms of the original Constitution, the inauguration of presidents in the past was on the 4th of March, and there's speculation that he'd be inaugurated as the, I believe, 17th president of the Republic
on the 20th.
On the 4th of March, following Ulysses S. Grant as having been the last actual president of the Republic, the United States of America. So that there's a lot of, you know, rumors going on, and those who are trying to debunk Trump supporters and, of course, make them out to be domestic terrorists are trying to, you know, push everything very aggressively, where the social media are just as corrupt as they could possibly be, so that Trump was having to fight a battle that was preposterous in its dimensions, not only against the Democratic Party and all of their dirty tricks. Well, I'm even convinced that the guy they have now is Joe Biden, who is presumably inaugurated, isn't the real Joe Biden. It appears to be a body double. I can elaborate on that. So here we had a fake inauguration of a fake president based upon a fake election, but also the mainstream media and the social media giants. And as I have pondered why Israel would want Trump out, I have been forced to the conclusion it's because even though he's been extremely generous to Israel, he has not bombed Iran. And they believe that the Biden administration would be far more amenable to pressure, that although Joe Biden wants to rejoin the Iran deal, which, of course, is intended to preclude Iran acquiring nuclear weapons, that they're going to stage some false flag attack, blame it on Iran, or take Biden out. They could do that under the 25th Amendment. He's clearly the guy, whoever he is cognitively incompetent. They're giving him what he should say, and it happened just the other day. He was walking past Marines, and he was told, salute the Marines, and instead of saluting, he said out loud, salute the Marines, because he was so used to simply saying what he was told to say. I mean, this is a clown show, and more it's being exposed, and more we're getting reports about Biden not being president, and that the inauguration was fake, and this is all an elaborate charade.
I'm going to probably add to this, but before you do, Paul, I want to make a couple connections, if I may, both of you. Israel.
Sure.
Israel has been controlling the United States for a long time, and they've been in bed with Daddy Bush, and Daddy Bush is possessed by a fallen angel, in my opinion, or was, and there's an attorney in Fort Worth, if he's dead, who is now possessed. What they do is they pass along the 200 aliens, as Otis Johnson, super spook, to work for General Flynn, used to say, and he said that they're registered with the NSA. Now, here's the point. Denver, Colorado plays a big role in everything. And it deals with a guy named, originally, my ex-witch doctor's father, Leonard Millman, who took over from Meyer Lansky, the Jewish mob in Canada and America. Now, there's a guy named Larry Mizell who's taken over for Leonard Millman. Whatever it is that possessed him, as Otis said, whatever possessed your ex-father-in-law lived for thousands of years. Now it's in the possession of Larry Mizell. It's in him. Now, Larry Mizell, Norman Brownstein are both American-Israeli PAC directors. Norman Brownstein and Larry Mizell and Neil Bush all sat on Silverado Savings and Loan as directors, an MDC subsidiary company, which is Richmond American Homes in the U.S. Now, to tie in something, Norman Brownstein is an APEC director, and so is Larry Mizell, American-Israeli PAC directors, currently. Norman Brownstein and Larry Mizell graduated from law school in Boulder together, Boulder, Colorado, and one became an attorney, the other became Brownstein for Millman. Larry Mizell became a builder for him, building apartments, because they were getting as much out of HUD as they could collect, and they were getting it. Now, Brownstein goes over and becomes CIA director in 1975 as CIA counsel, one of six to CIA director George H.W. Bush. Underneath him, there were 200 CIA counsel, underneath the six lead CIA counsel, Brownstein, Natale, and the others. Bill Barr was one of them, worked directly for Brownstein. What was Brownstein and Daddy Bush doing first, folks? You remember about this big mortgage bailout that finally hit in 2008 that cost $100 trillion worth of artificial mortgages that were turned into derivatives with all these banks tied to worldwide banks? Well, this was the boys at the CIA with Daddy testing to see if they could bring online artificial mortgages. And then they go in and say they own your mortgage, and here they had the mortgage already with their mortgage company, but they'd come back and steal your equity by saying they bought your mortgage from your mortgage company. But yet your mortgage company won't defend you. Now, we're up to 12 million houses in America have had that happen since 2008. People have had their mortgages stolen. This was Brownstein and Mizell doing it, Neil Bush and laundering all the drug money, all three of them together, directors of Silverado Savings that collapsed, because they were collapsing it through the FDIC, but they laundered nearly $9 trillion of Iran-Contra drug money tied to Bill and Hillary Clinton and their importing of drugs into MENA, Arkansas. Now, this is huge, because if you look at the media in 1992, Millman went in with Daddy Bush and Brofman. Now, Brofman worked for Millman, Seagram 7. Mizell, back up. Millman, Brofman, and Daddy Bush bought up ABC, CBS, and NBC. They took over CNN, the cocaine news network, from Turner by buying him out, and they started Fox News. They have the control, and that was Iran-Contra drug money. Now, social media. There's a guy named Zuckerberg, Facebook. His grandfather is Hank Greenberg. AIG Insurance, American Insurance General, where his grandfather was involved with Millman in writing and breaking insurance companies worldwide, through artificial loans that Noma created through his national acceptance company out of Denver, would have someone reinsure those insurance. Then AIG would buy the note that was being paid, supposedly, and they would buy him 6 months later from him, and all of a sudden, oh, they got payments for 2 or 3 months, and then they went into default, and he would make the reinsurance companies cough up the money. They put him in bankruptcy. They loaded him down so heavy. If you look at AIG, now that's Hank Greenberg was AIG. He was also tied in with Meyer Binder, the world's largest penny stock company that collapsed in 1990 or 91. And they were all tied together with Norman Brownstein, Larry Mizell, Neil Bush, AIG, Hank Greenberg, and Meyer Binder. I just thought I would remind people. Now, that's the Jewish control. They're the ones in control of the United States Congress and Senate. And how is it done? If you look up Norman Brownstein's name, you'll find out he has numerous law firms that they've absorbed to cover their asses of all the fraud that they've done. But Brownstein showed up laundering the money. Norman owned Citibank, Citicorp, before he died. They sold it to the Saudis, as I recall, stock holdings. But Brownstein was on the board of directors. He had to testify to the fact of why they were laundering the drug money for Salinas, the Mexican president, Salinas, when he was in power. He had law offices in Washington, D.C., Denver, Colorado, and he went by the name of Norman Brownstein in both. He went by Philip Brownstein in his Mexico City law office, where the president has, or where they had the capital or whatever, he had this presidency. Now he's laundered money. This is the same cat and gator that controls American-Israeli pact today. He writes nine out of every 10 bills written for the Congress and Senate, Brownstein drafts them up. I just thought I'd tell you the power of these fuckers. Now, Brownstein, or Mizell, Brofman, and some gangster from Maryland or someplace, who was under a federal indictment at the time, bought the Bank of Israel a while back. Later, they brought charges for bribery against the president of Israel, Omar, and they got him off in Supreme Court over there. And then he's turned around to charge for more bribes, and they finally stung him here about 3 years ago and put his ass in jail for 6 years. With that said, Paul, you want to pick it up? You still there, Jim?
Yes. I think you've toured the museum really effectively there, but we've got to get to where we're at right now. Jim, I have a couple questions for you. One, we all know that the logician tells us if we've got one false assumption that we're probably going to make some mistakes with further analysis. Do you believe that Israel controls China, or do you believe that China is an independent operator with an agenda of its own?
Oh, yes, I believe China is an independent operator with an agenda of its own, but that in the case of Trump, their interests converge because Trump has been hard-nosed with China. And, of course, China is also involved here. They turn out to be major owners of Dominion voting machines, and therefore they are encompassed by the executive order of 12 September 2018.
I forgot to add something on the Dominion software. It was Norman Brownstein out of Denver, Colorado that incorporated it, Jim. And there's a group that used to be tied to Hildebeest. And there was a book written by Ambrose Pritchard about the Lincoln bedroom. He did an excellent job. And I've talked to him a couple of times. But he brought up the Lipple Group. Lipple Group was Worthington Bank, Little Rock, Arkansas, during the time of Clinton's, which was Patrick Fong, Chinese Red Army Intelligence. They were supplying Iran-Contra with, was it heroin or opium they were supplying the U.S. with? Just thought I'd bring it up. Go ahead.
Well, Stu, Paul's right. We got to get to today.
Yes, let's do it.
To make many historical observations that are correct. But, Paul, I appreciate your getting the focus back to what's going on right now, because this is stunning and historic in and of itself.
Thank you, Jim. I want to continue with the line of questioning, just establishing a pretty tightly coupled link between Israel and China. I think it's important for us to understand how this plays out. I just want to note that Trump, in his pardons, it was very pro-Israeli, pro-people that are involved in dual citizenship, dual government that he pardoned, and that caught my attention. I'd like to move now to a couple of questions about timing and sequence. We had some deadlines that we were expecting things to happen. For instance, the DNI report on December 19th, the January 6th, where Pence had every opportunity to do what he legally should have done, and he didn't. And can you comment first on the 19th and the report that seems to not be available to us, and then on the 6th, and then possibly if you could, I'm asking a lot of questions at once, but I know you have an agile mind. And so then we've got declassification that was supposedly promised on late January before the election. Can you weave those three questions into a coherent narrative? I think you can, but I know I'm asking a lot.
Well, Paul, Trump has been failed by all the institutions of government. He has made every effort to pursue every legal avenue. Rudy Giuliani and Janet Ellis were making presentations to the state legislatures in the various states. The more crucial, most important, turned out to be Pennsylvania, Georgia, Wisconsin, and Michigan. There was a wonderful lawsuit put together by the Texas Attorney General and submitted directly to the Supreme Court, which is appropriate in the case of conflicts between states, where otherwise cases only reach the Supreme Court if they've gone through the district or circuit courts and the appellate courts and Supreme Courts of the various individual states. Now, we had the absurdity of the Supreme Court turning down this masterful lawsuit, where you can find an outline where it gave in broad, very detailed but broad treatment how the states had violated their own protocols and laws regarding the conduct of elections, thereby nullifying the votes that were acquired thereby, including that even though the Supreme Court itself has ruled that on elections, no ballots may be accepted after 8 p.m. on the day of the election, which, of course, there was the 3rd of November, that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court had allowed hundreds of thousands of votes to come in after, up to and through Friday, which, if you simply subtracted those alone, you would have had a Trump victory in Pennsylvania, where, by the way, let me mention that the legitimate vote was simply overwhelming for Trump. Carried almost all the states of the union, including California and Minnesota, with a total of 410 electoral votes, where Sidney Powell has published a map of the electoral vote before the interference took place, where they actually stopped the voting, counting the vote in the key states at the same time, which is extraordinary. It shows coordination because, in spite of all their efforts to rig the election, Trump was still leading. So they had to stop and make an adjustment to put Biden ahead and then set the algorithm so that Biden would thereafter maintain a slight lead of like 50.5 to 29.5. But everyone who is politically sophisticated understands this was a stolen sham election, and Biden didn't even come out of his basement to campaign. He actually openly stated that we put together the greatest voter theft operation in history on another occasion that I don't need your assistance to be elected, meaning because it's already in the bag, but I need your assistance afterwards. I mean, it's all grotesque. Now, the fact is, when Texas submitted, the Supreme Court turned down, and it appears that the Chief Justice was the instrumentality for denying that Texas had a cognitively discernible interest in how other states conduct their elections, which is a manifest absurdity. Every one of us as citizens, much less states, have an interest in how these elections are conducted, because if they're rigged, if they're treating Biden votes and voters differently than they are Trump votes and voters, that's a fundamental due process of equal protection under the law, but also leading to an outcome that is undemocratic and not in accordance with the will of the people. Where the Democrats have been extraordinarily cynical and hypocritical about attacking those who are contesting election when the proof of the electoral theft is abundant and compelling, where they have over 1,000 affidavits of individuals who personally witnessed improprieties in relation to the election, and claiming that those who are contesting the election are trying to thwart the will of the people and undo democracy. Well, they're even talking about bringing ethics charges against Senator Cruz and Senator Hawley, who are among the stalwarts who spoke up the truth about the election, as though they somehow committed an ethical impropriety, which tells you that the deplorable depths to which ethics have sunk in the American Congress is disgusting beyond belief. But where, you know, it looks as though Pence could have performed the action, as Vice President, of sending the issue of which electors ought to be counted back to the state legislatures, because the multiple states had submitted competing slates of electors, those coming from the legislatures themselves for Trump, those coming from the governor and the secretaries of state for Biden, and where the Constitution is very clear that only the state legislatures are authorized to determine how the electoral votes of their state will be cast. So not only did Mike Pence betray Donald Trump, but now, of course, Mitch McConnell also is doing so, and in multiple ways. He's even going along with his mock impeachment, which is ridiculous beyond belief, because it's very clear the penalty for impeachment is removal from office, but ostensibly Trump is already out of office, and experts on the Constitution, such as Alan Dershowitz, have observed that it makes no constitutional sense, that there's no role for an impeachment for an official. The former president is out of office because he's an ordinary civilian, and there's no way you can impeach constitutionally an ordinary civilian. So all these things tied together in a massive effort by the Democrats to attack and discredit Trump supporters, who are now going to be characterized as domestic terrorists for voting for Trump. They're going to make all kinds of efforts to take our guns and to turn us into serfs and slaves, and to promote the coronavirus fake pandemic in order to control every aspect of our lives, for the sake of what ultimately will turn out to be the Great Reset, where none of us any longer own any property but have surrendered all of our assets in order to receive a stipend from the state in a living space we can rent, where all money is controlled digitally, and if we violate their behavioral expectations, then they can cut us off. I mean, it's beyond Orwellian. I mean, this is, frankly, this is a monster future that they have mapped out, where Donald Trump, in my opinion, has been singularly heroic in standing up and may yet, I believe, slay the dragon. Now, give me what else you'd like to know, Paul. That's my more comprehensive response to your question.
Well done. I just wish you would have mentioned that we're all going to be happy when we own nothing, too.
Yeah, that's right. They've actually published articles saying that 1930 I own nothing and I'm happier than I've ever been, which is just ridiculous garbage. I mean, just garbage.
Let me tell you something. You know, Jim, they already started. I had a problem here. Paul's aware of it. We did a show a couple times in a row here, the past couple shows I posted. Before that, I didn't even get your show up yet that I did with you the 2 days before the election. I didn't get Bennett's show up either because they were screwing with my internet connections so bad with my telephone. I couldn't do nothing. I'm sitting in here on Thursday night after the election, Jim, and I'm sitting here looking at something that was on the news around 12:30, had been working on the internet. That is, taking care of business, you can go in and take a look, as an example, look at the cyber terrorist attacks and the IPs and so on and so forth that I posted, big networks of them. I'm taking care of them, and all of a sudden, I just gotten off the internet, and I set the phone down, and sitting on my table here, and I'm looking at something that was being broadcast and listened to it, and all of a sudden, my phone catches on fire. Just lights up. I went, oh my God.
Fire.
I pulled it apart real quick, and the battery fell on the floor on fire, smoking. I'm holding my breath. I went and got a spatula, scraped it up off the floor, threw it in the sink, put water on it. I opened up the house at both ends with big fans going at each end, sucking air in and blowing it out for 3 hours, and the whole bit. I go back to the company that I got it from. Of course, I figured what they did is they stone-ard me. I go back to the company, and they don't want to replace it. I said, screw you. Sell me a phone. She got mad at me for saying, screw you. So I had to go to another location and buy another phone at about $75, $74 or $75. But the thing was, is they, the computer went down also because it came back up and says, put in your code. So they hit me with the satellite, knocked the computer down, and bust or blew up my phone in my face. Now, if I'd been asleep and left that phone plugged or left that phone with the battery in it, I would have burned down. That's attempted murder. Anyway, that's what happened to me this past week, bastards. So they're after everybody. They're after everybody. And Jim, by the way, you've got that expert in computers. I got a way to, and I've already done it. All the IPs that are blocked on my site, I want to put that into a software that all the patriots can use on their websites to get protected. So we'll be talking about it off the air, but they're after us. Now, here's supposedly what is posted today in Sputnik News. Trump's statement, I'll do something, but not just yet, quote unquote, is what they're quoting Trump said today.
Well, let's get back to Paul. I think he's got good questions, and I'm very interested in his take on all of the above.
My questions, of course, for the listeners and for me, of course, are about timing and sequence, and I'd like to focus a little bit on intelligence and infiltration. So you have information, we all have information about military tribunals. Now, I'm working from an assumption that there's infiltration within all intelligence agencies, and I'm going to use the monkey wrench example, that a lot of what they've tried to do has been thwarted because within the tribunals there's infiltration. Jim, you've got a background in intelligence. Do you have a position on that? Can you give the listeners and me your analysis why things seem to either grind to a standstill or they don't come to fruition?
Well, I can only tell you about the plans. I was not an intelligence officer. I was an artillery officer and trained as an infantry officer in the Marine Corps. But the sources that have been highly informative to me about all of the issues we've been discussing here include Jerry Corsi, who explained how the military had approached Trump to recruit him and how they had discovered that it would be so devastating if they were to arrest all the firms and the government would collapse that they supported him to become president to lay out a master plan, which means that this whole thing may turn out to have been the greatest sting operation in the history of the world, provided it all comes to pass as planned, where there was an expectation of using troops. Turns out Washington, D.C. is all a lot of tunnels underneath, just as in Dealey Plaza, there are a lot of tunnels underneath Dealey Plaza. And that Marines were in the tunnels to arrest, you know, there were about 500 of these congressional miscreants gathered together for the inauguration. But it didn't happen for one reason or another, and I believe it didn't happen because they were aware that they might be arrested, and that's why they did a virtual inauguration. They weren't physically present. Indeed, I have one report that no one could find anyone in Washington who actually witnessed the inauguration, and I believe because it actually didn't take place, and therefore it may, on that ground alone, not be legitimate. I mean, there are very specific requirements for the inauguration specified by the Constitution that do not appear to have been satisfied in this case. And we're getting, you know, more and more reports that the Biden administration may be gradually waking up to the fact that it has no power. And whereas I described before, they actually were inaugurated into positions in the corporation, which was then already defunct, so that none of these executive orders, for example, are showing up on the Federal Register. But an authentic executive order would show up on the Federal Register. These are not. Therefore, they appear not to be authentic executive orders from a person authorized to execute them. And as I said before, the photographs of Biden signing these executive orders in the Oval Office do not appear to have been taken in the Oval Office, because you look through this one window and there's a parking lot which does not exist at the White House. So I'm telling you, the aspects of this are so fascinating and so absolutely incredible that, you know, it just dwarfs any previous sequence of events in American history.
I'm in agreement. Sometimes I'm finding my jaw on the ground, and I pick it up, and I find my jaw on the ground one more time. You mentioned earlier in the broadcast that you think things could unravel in less than 30 days. I think people are going to be very receptive to that message, because I think another message is that we're looking to March even. What do you think may happen in the next 30 days?
Well, as I said, in the past, the presidents of the Republic were inaugurated on March 4th. So that if this proceeds, as I believe it will, and of course can't assert with utter confidence, I mean, I'm not a participant, I'm not a player, I'm an observer and an analyst. If this proceeds as I believe it will proceed, within 30 days there will have been a mopping up operation. A lot of these current players will have been taken into custody. Sidney Powell is qualified as a military prosecutor. She could well be involved in handling many of these cases. And I say, I mean, with all the qualifications that attend thereto, it could be that Donald Trump will be inaugurated as, I believe it would be the 17th president, the next in line following Ulysses Grant of the Republic, before it became a corporation in 1871. I mean, that is what I believe, and this, of course, is the most optimistic scenario could take place as we move forward.
Scott Bennett had told me that, I believe he even said it in the show, that Sidney Powell was given before the inauguration, supposedly on the 20th, that Sidney Powell was given a job about 2.5 weeks prior to that as an assistant U.S. attorney in charge of voter fraud, is what he said, that he was aware of it. And he had testified for 6 weeks before a military and tribunal and top-level investigators of our government, because of where he worked at in the same building with Ed Snowden. And remember, they locked him up for, you know, he was a lieutenant in the Army, intelligence, working out of a firm that was a Pentagon subbed, but he was an actual lieutenant in the Army in intelligence looking for terrorist financing, and et cetera. And that's what Bennett's role was. But when
you got a couple things a bit mixed. He got into the terrorist financing after they tried to sack him out of the Army because he was not adhering to the official line. Scott's very independent, of great integrity. It was when he was incarcerated in a low-security federal penitentiary that he came into contact with Red Birkenfeld, who actually knew all the financing for 9/11 that led to Scott publishing his book, Shell Game, which is really a startling and ironic consequence of taking a good man and trying to get him out of the way and putting him in a position to make even more powerful contributions to exposing the truth, in this case about 9/11.
Yeah, but anyway, Scott had indicated to me that Sidney Powell was given that position as an assistant U.S. attorney for voter fraud. Whether she still has that position, I don't know. But with him giving testimony of everything he knew for 6 weeks before top investigators, that's pretty significant.
What would you like to add before we conclude our conversation today?
I would just like to ask one more question. I think we probably had a good ending earlier when I asked you a tautological question, but can you comment, Jim, about the presence of the National Guard and what we might glean from their presence about the razor wire seemingly keeping people in instead of out, the treatment of the Guard, how long is the Guard going to be there? Is there a possibility that they're being experimented on? Did they get a jab? What do we know about the Guard's presence there? How long is it going to last? And where does it go from here? How does it conclude?
Well, the governors of several states, including Texas and Florida, and I believe the third, New Hampshire, are withdrawing their forces after the abuse to which they were subjected by Capitol Hill police, it appears, who were under the control of Nancy Pelosi. That's what everyone needs to understand. These were not Trump supporters at the Capitol on the 9th. That was a 226 Antifa who were there to pretend, fake being Trump supporters, a classic false flag, comparable roughly to the Reichstag fire. This was the German parliamentary building that Hitler had set a fire to blame on the communists so he could acquire greater power politically in Germany at the time. Nancy Pelosi was instrumental in orchestrating this false flag attack on the Capitol to demonize Trump and try to expand her political power and to justify domestic terrorism legislation that basically is going to criminalize political conservatism and right-wing views under what's becoming increasingly a totalitarian Stalinist democratic regime, where you got to realize they know they're vastly outnumbered, they know they're illegitimate, so they're going to use the Balkan force to advance their positions in order to protect themselves. I do not think it is going to work, but it won't be for lack of trying, that they turned the guard out of sleeping inside the Capitol into a parking lot was absurd from the point of view of optics and perception, where Donald Trump has actually offered to allow the troops to stay at the Trump Hotel there in the former U.S. Postal Office just down the street. So I think it means the Democrats look very, very bad, and the Donald Trump look very, very good. And that's appropriate because the Democrats are bad, and Trump is good. And I believe, you know, they were there initially. I mean, one way of looking at it is this: with the District of Columbia is an entity unto itself, rather like the Vatican. And the fencing can be viewed as protecting property that belongs to the Republic of the United States of America, and that those are assets of the Republic. And yes, I think there are multiple prospects about what could have happened and who could have been arrested. But as I say, for reasons we don't know completely and in detail, it did not happen, and I believe it was because they weren't there. They weren't physically present there to be arrested, but which also suggests to me that this was not an inauguration in conformity with the law, and therefore I believe this inauguration is null and void. And that, you know, that means I don't think that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are even properly inaugurated to offices that are no longer viable because they're part of the defunct corporation that no longer exists. Trump, by the way, and all the assets the corporation transferred to the Republic. I mean, this is just such genius. And I just say it reflects the fact that you had a man who cares about America. His America First is a genuine concern of his. And because of his business background, because he'd been through bankruptcies and is used to dissolving corporations, he simply had the biggest corporation in the world to dissolve, and he appears to have done it. So I say, if all this plays out anywhere like the way I'm describing, this man is going to go down as by far the greatest president in the history of the United States.
That eliminates the national debt, Jim.
That may very well... Stu, I think there are lots of ramifications here.
incredible analysis. I think we got to wind it up, guys. Jim, it'll be great to have you on in 5 to 7 days and see where we are in 5 to 7 days.
Yeah, Jason, absolutely.
Before you go.
And Stu, thanks again for the opportunity to join you.
Yes, I want to say thank you to both of you. But remember, folks, get involved. Get involved in recall petitions of these federal criminals called U.S. congressmen and senators. Start recalling them. There's a recall petition, and there's a story on how I gave attention on the air, and I know Jim will do it on his show, of anybody that's doing any recall petitions, get involved. Now, there's the Florida did a withdrawal from the union. We need 39 states to do it, and they're done. They're toast. In case of Trump's game plan, as you've described, Jim, doesn't work. We, the people, have to take back our country, period. With that said, thank you both.
Well said, Stu. Hey, thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Jim.
You got it. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Stu.
Thank you, Jim. JimFetzer.org, folks. JimFetzer.org.